want to do it and arrange so that you can have class meetings in your homes. You can have it once a week, once every other week, or how often? I would say that more often than once a month. Just think of that. And then when you have had your original meeting, suggestions will be given and received among you about how you want to carry on your cooperative movement there as a class in your home. And this is a time when you can have games, maybe, questionnaires about lessons you've had in the past and things like that. And I think that you'll find it very rewarding. I know it was very rewarding to me when I was a young fellow. The importance of the Bible to me, because of my early experiences in this, I find that there was more than just the gospel story, which of course is the most important of all in our course of becoming acquainted with the Bible. I learned that the Bible was made up of a number of chapters, number of books. There were these books were identified into sections, like poetical sections, biographical, prophetical, historical, and such as that. There were a certain number of books in the first five books in the Bible had a name. And so we learned not only the contents of the Bible and relating to our soul, but we learned the history of the book itself. Can anybody tell me, I'm positive you can answer this, what is a name other than Bible? What is the other name that we can call the Bible? Anybody know?
Compilation of books.
Well, it's a compilation of books, that's right.
Holy Scriptures?
What?
Holy Scriptures?
Well, that's another one. But where did the Bible derive its name? How did it happen to get the name Bible? Nobody knows. Well, that's what you learn when you study courses like I have in this little green book here. This is called Hurlbut's Teacher's Training Lessons. It teaches you all about the physical not material, but in the physical, biological, historical parts about the Bible. Now, the first five books of this book, which I call Biblos, it's a Greek word. Where's Tom? He ought to know that. The Greek word Biblos. How is his father, by the way, or his brother? He's still under surgery. Okay, thank you. That's the kind of a meeting we're going to conduct tonight. We'll just break in any time we feel, and that is not going to have any formality about it. Now, the Bible derived its name from the Greek word Biblos. And the word Biblos also means book of books. So the Bible is made up of many books. Now, who can tell me how many books there are totally in the Bible?
37
is one answer. Okay, Doris, you took the course of study. What is it?
66.
You were kind of way off, wasn't you, brother?
Old Testament, that's 39, huh?
That's right. I was going to come to that. Why did you have to answer it before I asked the question?
Because I gave you the wrong answer.
Oh. Well, all right. Now, the Old Testament, if I had a blackboard, which we can't use, both of them is used up in the classes, I would write on that blackboard the first five books.
You can use my blackboard. You want me to get it for you?
No, that's all right. I think we can get by without it. It's not that awful important. The first five books are given a name. Anybody tell me what those are?
Five books of Moses.
Five books of the law. Which are what? Ron, what are the first five books of the Bible?
Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy.
Right. He went to school. All right, that's fine. Now, these books are books generally ascribed to Moses of having written those books called the books of the law. Now, the next one are a group of 12. 12 books in this next section, which are called the historical books. They are a history of peoples, and I'd like to have, it's a shame to call on somebody after Ron only had 5 books to name, but there's 12 of them. In order now, who will volunteer to name the 12 books? All right.
You mean beginning with the sixth one?
Beginning with the sixth book.
First five.
The next 12 books after Deuteronomy. Whoop, Esther, that's the end of it.
Psalms, Proverbs.
No, those are different ones.
I just wanted to say the rest of it.
Everybody heard that. You knew it anyway. But if somebody asked you to do it, you might stumble. Now, you may not think that this is highly important, but you know, if you would follow this process of studying the book itself, that when you wanted to turn to some particular part of it, you would be able to more readily go to that particular spot. Sometimes you almost come to the very page that you want. And never do as I did. Learn that such and such a scripture is on this page and it's about up in here somewhere. Which is very wrong. Now there are those that have a mental capacity that they can readily remember sometimes even the page in the Book of Mormon. But they can quite often, memorize where the book is and what chapter and verse, which I never learned to do, in spite of the fact that I had taken a very emphatic step in trying to acquaint myself with the book itself. Now, there were 12 books. They are all historical. They are history of peoples. And they cover, and if we used to go into this completely, you would learn how many centuries that particular era of time covered. And in fact, it covered 13 centuries. And then following this were 5 books, which is called the poetical books. And Sister Evelina started to say them. And we're going to call on, Eddie. Next 5 books. And they're called poetical books.
Poetic. Okay, let's see. Psalms, Proverbs.
No, you missed one. In their order.
Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes.
Anybody? Songs of Solomon. How many have read the book Songs of Solomon? I mean, okay, now put them down. How many have not? 1, 2, 2. Okay, those of you who have read it, how many of you have studied the Songs of Solomon? That's okay with me. There's not much in there to study. Now, that's a shame. That's a shame to say something about the Bible, its contents, but nevertheless, it's rather on a line that our morals are our judge. Now, we have named the 5 poetical books. Now we have the 5 major prophets. Now, why are they called major prophets? Considering that there are other prophets in the Bible. Jay.
Why are they called major prophets?
Yeah, why would they be called the next 5 books?
I would say because their writings took in more time, and they were lengthier and more detailed.
What about the relation of... Well, you said time, didn't you? Yes. Covers considerable time. Even time that has not even come yet. Now, that's the 5 major prophets. Now, Marlene, what are they? You only left out one. There's 5 of them. What'd you say, Isaiah? That's all there is. There's five altogether.
Daniel.
Okay, Daniel's one. But one was left out. What was it?
Lamentations.
That's the Lamentations of who? Who wrote the Lamentations?
Jeremiah.
That's right. Now, in these major prophets, as the question has been pretty properly answered, the great deal of the major prophecies and importance as to our time and learning lessons from those things that have taken in the past, the prophecies been given, rejected, or accepted, and it tells us all about the result of rejection of listening to the Spirit of God in our counsels and prophetically. Now, in the last one, there are 12 what are called the minor prophets. I don't know why they're minor in some respects, because they are as well highly important to us, you know. And somebody that really knows the Bible, we're going to call on Gordon. The last 12 books. No, you missed one. You stumbled over. Now this, I was hoping somebody would stumble. I don't mean to pick on Gordon, because any one of us could do it. You're looking at the answer. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to look at the answer.
You are.
I know them. I can do them anyway, whether I have this here or not. I'm not going to brag about it either. Maybe later I'll prove it to you. But that's all right. In case I'm going to ask you a question, I don't want you to be looking in your Bible to see what the answer is before I ask it. But these 12 minor prophets begin with the word Hosea. Okay, that's okay. Now, some of these preachers are supposed to know all about this. How many preachers we got here? There's one way back in the corner back there. Come on, Jim. What are the names of the last 12 books?
I've been sitting here thinking ever since you asked
Gordon. I've given you a hint. The first one was Hosea. Hosea, or however you want to pronounce it. You see what I mean by learning this, that, like I said before, that if you know them by heart, you can take your book and open up within just a few pages of where you want it. You don't even have to have a thumb index. Once you've acquired this ability to know where the books are, you go back over this after you've learned all the books. You learn that they are in classifications, like historical, poetical, and major prophets, the minor prophets, so on. And over the New Testament, of course, they have different names as well. But you will be able to know in a course of study of this kind, which I'm talking principally about our young people's class, or there can be an adult class, very much an adult class. I would think that we would profit very much by learning the book as a book. We've learned the gospel pretty well. There are things in it we also stumble on once in a while that tells us we didn't do this or that some time ago, or something we should do in the future. We know that. But there are things that will enable you so much more, and you become so well acquainted with a book that you will grow much more attached to it, if you can think that possible. But you will. You'll become attached to that book. Now, you can do the same thing with the Book of Mormon, but I'm giving this to you tonight for an example of what can be done. Now, these last 12 books, who's going to volunteer to name them right in order? Doris? Doris, okay. You stuck up your hand, feebly so. All right. That's in their order. Now, there's something else I want to speak of, that when you learn the books, now name the five books of law, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. There's no sense in repeating it off so fast. It's not the idea of seeing how fast you can say them, but the thing that you can know them in their order. You take the last 12 books. Was he Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, and Nehemiah, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Isaiah, Zechariah, and Malachi? And I said so fast I couldn't say it right. Now, there's no sense in that. So learn them in this order, and when you pick up you want to go to the last 12 books, you can come very close to opening it up right to the page, and saves you a lot of time. And if it's in a meeting of this kind, why, it would save time on that too. Now, in the New Testament, it's divided up. Now remember that we said that there was 66 books in the whole Bible. There are, how many books in the Old Testament?
39.
39. You got it right this time. Okay. Now, you write out the word, pretend there's a blackboard here, and you write out the word Old Testament. There's three letters in the word Old. There's nine letters in the word Testament. 39 books in the Old Testament. Simple, isn't it? Now, when we come to the New Testament, we got the same thing, New Testament, same number of letters. But, three letters, New, three letters, Testament, 9. 3 times 9 is 37. Is that right? Okay, fine. And so, you that's how easy you can remember in a classwork in the study of the book. That 39, 3 and 9 is just the simple letters by which you can readily identify. Now, in the New Testament, they're divided up into 4, 1, 13, and 8, and historical. 1. Now, the first four books, let's see. Crystal, where are you? Okay, the first four books. Is that all there is? Oh. Okay, who wrote the book Matthew? We haven't got too many children here, have we? Well, it's simple enough. We know that Matthew wrote that. How about the book of Mark? How about the book of Luke? How about the book of John? Did they all write that book after their name? You sure? Anybody say no? I hear none. You're correct. Who wrote the book of Acts, which is the next book, which is a historical book? Luke. How do you know that? Huh?
I learned a long time ago. I had that book too.
Okay. Now, why and how do you know that Luke wrote it? You know, there are those that say that's not a sure thing. But we believe that Luke did write the book. But how do you know he did? Well, in reality, it would sometimes be hard to prove. But the tenor of the life of Luke and the fact that he did not follow in the callings of the other men. Matthew and Mark, Luke and John were all apostles. Jay, what's the matter? Who wasn't an apostle in that group? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Luke was. I don't think Mark was either.
No. Okay. Now, those are called biography books. Biographical, in other words. And they have a biography of the writings of these men. Now, the historical book is the book of Acts, written by Luke. And this is a history of the apostles, the Acts of the Apostles. The story is told of their ministries and their works and their teachings there as they are recorded in the book. Now, the next one contains 13 books. They're all in one group. Anybody want to volunteer to repeat them in order?
I'll try.
Okay. You're not looking at the answer now.
No.
Good. I didn't mean to.
Count off as I go.
Okay.
The Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians. Colossians.
No. There's nobody in this room by that name.
Oh, Philippians. Philippians, Colossians, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Timothy, and Titus and Hebrews. No?
Did he say them right? Huh? What was the last one he named?
Hebrews.
Is Hebrews in there? Now there's another book in there, almost like it. There, remember, there's the Philipp, there was the Philippians.
Philemon,
right? You got it. Philemon, some of them call it. Some of them call it Philemon. Now these are the 13 books written mostly as we can. I don't think we have any contest to know who wrote those 13 books, or the most of them. Paul, that's right. Was there any other writers in the names given? Huh?
Titus?
Timothy?
Another one? Yeah? That's right. Now, these letters came, in a sense, basically from Paul's teachings. That's why that they are included in the 13 Pauline epistles, as they are named in our study. Now, the next ones are the general epistles, written to generally anybody, about anybody. And there are 8 of them. Now, who will volunteer to name those 8 general epistles? Who?
You mean to leave off where he's left off with Hebrews?
No, Hebrews was not the last one named.
Well, Philemon, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, Hebrews.
Yeah.
All right, and then you had James, 1st and 2nd Peter. You had 1st and 2nd John, Jude, and Revelation.
He left out one.
3rd John.
3rd John. 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and Jude.
Right.
Who was Jude? In relation to somebody else.
Brother to Christ.
The brother of Christ. James.
Brother of Christ.
Right. John.
John the Beloved.
That's right, John the Beloved. Now, we have covered the 8 general epistles. Now we have one more. That's called the prophetical, because it's all prophecy. What is it? Anybody?
Revelations.
Revelations, that's right. And who wrote the Revelations?
John.
John who?
Beloved.
Okay. Now I've tried to give you some, what I feel is a good thing for us to put into practice. There's a lot more, because this is the book that contains all of this whole thing. It's not very big. And I used to teach classes in this, called Hurlbut's Teaching, Normal Teaching. And we'd go for a certain time, and then we would have exams, just like you do in school. And then you were graded according to your papers that you turned in. And then at the end of the semester, as you might call it, you was given a certificate of your passing from, not really passing from one grade to another, but you get a certificate identifying that you have successfully fulfilled the requirements of this study. In the process of doing this study, we used to put on the blackboard a great big hand. We draw a picture of a hand. And we had the law and the historical, the prophetical, and the major prophets and the minor prophets. We had all of them divided into each one of these. And right here in the middle of it says OT, meaning Old Testament. And so on. Now, when you get all of this done, then you go back and you learn all about the people in each book. What they meant into the future of the world. And of the world particularly in which they lived, from which we can gain quite an advantage of their experiences and such. Now, as you learn them, you learn not only that, but you learn the time in which they lived, the era of time, as to events that took place. Like there was the calling of Abraham, and then you learn the year when he was called. You learn the, Abraham, well, anybody, Isaac, Jacob, any of them. You learn the era of time they lived, what they were noted for, and the peoples that were with them at that time. And so as you go down through every one of these five groups in the Old Testament, five groups in the New Testament, you'll learn them all. There are 66 books. There is 39 authors. 36 authors. And it took 13 centuries. It covers a period of history of 13 centuries. Now, I would like to know if you think you have something that might interest you of what I have brought to you now so far. Do you see any value, or do you think that it would be interesting to create, start classes like principally the young people and the adult classes, where you can do this, and it's an enjoyable thing. I think it's just I just loved it. I liked history anyway, but some of us may not. As far as that goes, it's not that highly important as far as that goes. But I have tried to show you there's something more to the Bible than we have generally thought about. And the way it is presented and why it's presented, and the whole thing. And then when we have finished that, we go to the Book of Mormon and you study the same thing. I've got quite a few lessons on the Book of Mormon. In fact, I got lessons on the whole Book of Mormon. And the same course was followed then. And they got certificates showing that they had successfully gone through that study of the book. You learn how the book come about, all of its, and the period of time that it covered, what it prophesied of, what the purpose of the book was, and all of these things. Now, some of them you can answer readily. But this, I have brought to you because it's a thing with me. Brother Jay, when he surprised me with this some time ago, he said, would you take a Wednesday evening? And I said, yes. Well, I thought, be prayer meeting. But then he said, you do your thing. You can do anything you want, however you want to do it. And I still didn't understand what it was until here just the other day. He said, it's going to be a surprise. And there was no one any more surprised than I was. And I tried to put my mind to something that would interest you, be a lesson to you, something that would make you know happiness and maybe a smile. You may have to laugh at one thing or another, but it's not wrong to laugh. By the way, did Jesus ever smile? Well, did he? And where my other slip of paper went to? I got a paper in here somewhere. There it is. Remind me in what order I want to present this. Can anybody say yes, definitely, that Jesus ever smiled? Nobody. Who's got a Bible with them? Yes. Hubert. Okay, Hubert. Now read this aloud. The Book of Mormon. The third Nephi, the ninth chapter. the 25th and the 31st verses. 25th and the 31st verses.
And it came to pass that Jesus beheld them, and they did pray unto him, and his countenance did smile upon them, and the light of his countenance did shine upon them, and behold, they were as white as the countenance, and also the garments of Jesus.
31st verse now.
And when Jesus had spoken these words, he came again unto his disciples, and behold, they did pray steadfastly, without ceasing unto him, and he did smile upon them again, and behold, they were white even as Jesus.
Good. Jesus could smile. He could cry too, couldn't he? Now, the reason why I have brought this out is that we can, well, maybe there's something that you didn't realize before. I know when I was a youngster, a young fellow, and several times during the course of my life, I have asked myself a question, did Jesus ever laugh? And, you know, in the Bible, there's not, the word smile isn't in there. I mean, in the encyclopedias, the word smile can't be found. But being better acquainted with Christ as a result of his visit to this country, to this land, we learn just a little bit more about him. He could smile. We learn from the Bible, of course, that he shed tears over a city that rejected him, over the death of one he loved. Now, I'm doing this that we might put our minds to the thought that there's just more to the Bible and the Book of Mormon than just a book with covers. It contains a volume of things that we haven't anywhere near come to knowing that we should know. And we know for a fact that there are things that are yet to come that we don't know about. We assume that certain things are going to take place in a certain era. We believe that Christ is coming not too far away because of certain conditions that prevail in the world today, of the sinfulness. We remember Sodom and Gomorrah and Tyre and Sidon and Nineveh, cities that were destroyed. Not Nineveh, but cities that almost destroyed. But because of their sin, their transgressions, and rejecting God and his laws, and we, as we try to compare as near as history will enable us to do so, it's my full belief that we are so far in the depths of sin as a world population that Nineveh that Tyre and Sidon and those other wicked cities couldn't begin to compare with us. Now it's important that we do acquire this knowledge. And if we don't already know it, there are things that are mysteries and will be mysteries till Christ comes very evidently. But we must learn all that we can, use every facet and method we can to acquire this knowledge. And so Christ did smile. Now, I'm going to play a little game. Do you know what it means to bind books? I don't mean to put a cover on them. To bind a book. Well, in this way, we bind a book. 1 Corinthians is one of the Pauline epistles. It is preceded by a book, and it follows a book, and there's a book that follows it. Now that's what we're going to do. These books that precede the book that I name, you name the book that's before it, and the name of the book that's after it. Now that's all a part of this course here. And so when he asks you to bind the book, Harold, bind the book of Matthew, the book preceding it, the book after it.
Malachi and Mark.
Good. Ron, I'll give you an easy one. Bind the book of Acts. The book preceding, the book following. Need some help? What are you hesitating about? Just come right out with it. If you're not sure, just say it anyway.
Romans is 1.
What is it doing? Is that before Acts or after?
After.
Okay. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Acts. So the preceding book is John. Okay. We'll try one more. Gordon, bind the book of Nahum. The book before, the book after Nahum. You know, the one that precedes Nahum is it's a material that we used to use in our old pot-bellied stove years ago, our old base burners. There was windows in it. We called that the window, the glass, it had a name. What was it? Oh, we still have it today. It's a popular mineral. Anybody? What was it?
Mica.
Follows what?
No. Another name for isinglass. They call it Mica.
Oh, Mica. Oh, okay. Okay, Mica is right. Nahum is preceded or follows? Does Mica follow or precede?
It's after.
Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Mica. Okay, okay. Bind the book of Omni. Remember, we're studying the books of the Bible. The books of book, what precedes and what follows the book of Omni?
The book of what?
Omni.
The book of Mormon.
Oh. Okay. I was satisfied you'd answer that, or somebody would. Now, we pulled that on Brother Sheldon one time, and his face turned redder than a beet because he gave me a name of the books that bound Omni, and they were books in the Bible, and here he's an apostle. Now, I'm not laying any hint that you should try that on me, but I just give you what happened to somebody else. Okay. Remember some time ago, in our conversations before or after church, sometimes, you know, I'm all the time doing that. Maybe that's a bad habit, a bad thing for me to, some call it frivolous. But you know, I'm a believer in happiness. And I've known a lot of it in my life. And I've known a lot of it has come when we break our tedious day-by-day things by having something that makes us smile or even laugh right out loud. He should have been at the priesthood meeting the other night. I mean about this particular thing. There's something else there that I won't mention. But anyway, something, and you know, everybody there just laughed and laughed over some little thing that was said. And yet we were a serious group. I don't think there's anything that we have been more serious about than the subject that we were discussing. It was marriage. That's a worthwhile subject to study about. And one day we're going to bring forth to you something that is the general understanding and opinion as being the church's study and course in this matter. So, we have laughter. And it's necessary. Now just stop and think that if you never could laugh, if there was nothing in this world that you ever had anything to laugh about, would you enjoy it? Well, certainly you would not. Now, it's not wrong to laugh. And I don't mean that we should be boisterous within our temple, within our church chapel. But we have laughed in our chapel, and there's been no offense. And that's the kind of laughter, possibly if you do laugh, that was not offending to our master or to God himself. So in my course of doing this, I ask a group I think it was in the group. Anyway, the name, give me the name of the President of the United States 28 years ago, 29 years ago. Let's see, who shall I ask that one? Do you want to answer that one? You're a graduate of high school and everything. Eddie?
Truman?
The name of the President of the United States 29 years ago. Do you know the answer, Gordon?
Maybe.
Okay.
Light?
No. Not Truman. Wasn't Eisenhower. No. 29 years ago. The name of the President of the United States, 29 years ago. It happens to be, now don't be surprised, it happens to be Ronald Reagan. Wasn't his name 29 years ago? That's what I ask you. What was the name of the President of the United States 29 years ago? And it was Ronald Reagan. Now, that's the kind of a question, somewhat like a question I'm going to ask you now. I thought some of you know that because I've sprung that on you before. Who can right off the bat tell me whose daughter was Noah? I'm asking a legitimate question. Whose daughter was Noah? You got the book there, the Bible. Look up Numbers. The 26th chapter and the 33rd verse. Mm-hmm.
And the 33rd verse?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Read the verse.
The daughters and the names of the daughters of.
Everybody hear it?
No.
Well, hear it. Speak up.
Were Mahala and Noah, Hagla.
You don't have to name the rest of them. Noah's name was there, wasn't it?
Yep. There was one, two, three, four, five.
Five. And who was the daughter of Noah?
Noah.
Or who was the. Whose daughter was Noah?
Whose what?
Whose daughter was Noah?
The daughters of Noah?
Zelophehad?
No. That's right.
Zelophehad.
Zelophehad.
Yeah.
Was the father of Noah. She was a daughter. Now this don't mean a thing. It's no value to whatsoever. But it's one of the things that that you can have in your... in your parties, class parties and things like that, something of that nature. Okay. Now, how many can tell me Lot's wife's name?
Salt.
Salt. No, not quite. Anybody know what the name of Lot's wife was? Well, quite a number of years ago when I was out in West Virginia, out in Morgantown, West Virginia, and the people out there, and particularly the ones that I was with, were, might just well say, illiterate. And most of them couldn't even write their name. And some of them that had gone as far as the sixth grade or more still couldn't write their name. They wasn't forced to go to school, so they lacked the education that you and I have. But I'll tell you that they were deeply concerned about the scriptures as they affect their life. Deeply concerned. And when I held classes, I realized, after I had got acquainted with them, I realized that education along this line would be helpful. And so I held classes there. I didn't preach to them, I just held classes. And during the course of this, why one of our young men, of his own volition, he just said, he knew, I don't know how this come about, but anyway, he raised his hand and I said, "What is it, Charles?" And he says, "I know the name of Lot's wife." Well, I never knew that she had a name. Honestly, I didn't. So, if you want to know what I found out, Hugh,
yeah.
Speak it right out loud now. The 17th chapter of Luke and the 32nd verse.
17th chapter of Luke?
Yep. Yeah. In the 32nd verse. Now speak it out real loud so everybody can hear who what the name of Lot's wife was.
Remember Lot's wife.
Right. Now that's what that young man said. That was the name of Lot's wife. Remember. So in the course of a missionary's life, there's all kinds of things that offset the trials, the weariness, tiredness, and being away from home for so long. There is projected into the missionary's life some highly amusing things that would just shake you, I'll tell you. They were so funny. Some of them of the nature that I had to go outdoors to do my laughing because it would have been embarrassing to them. Because anybody should have known what things was about. And so this is one of the, some of the things that the missionary's life encompasses. Now, my eyesight is really getting terrible. I got a little book here that give me some ideas. Patricia, where'd you go? There you are, way back in the corner. Suppose that we want to pray for forgiveness. What should we do? Real loud. Real loud. What did you say? Oh. Did you hear it? Things you're supposed to do if you pray for forgiveness. And she said sin. That's you finally caught on. Okay, we have one or two others. You know, too bad Tom isn't here. But, you know, he's quite a fisherman. He went fishing the other day, and you ought to have seen the mess of fish he brought home. You could put it in my pocket here. And, of course, I had the same kind of a mess as he did. We each got one fish. But we can brag about it a little bit because nobody else on the whole lake got any more than we did. They just wasn't there to be had. But there's a fish story now in which I have, I was hoping that Tom would be here, and I'm picking on some of you people tonight. You know, Tom went fishing and he caught a lot of fish. And he brought them over to Jay, thinking Jay and his good little companion liked fish, knowing that Jay didn't get a chance to go fishing very often. So he offered those fish to Jay, and he confessed to Jay that those fish had been caught on Sunday. But Jay said, "Well, the fish aren't to blame for that." And he took the fish gladly. Now we have one here.
We studied once in the Old Testament about burnt offerings. Why don't we have burnt offerings now?
Why don't we have burnt offerings now? Jim, do you know why?
I don't know. I had something for breakfast this morning looking like burnt offerings.
You said you had a talk meeting on marriage. You just found a way to break one up.
Joel, have you got something on your mind, something you wanted to tell me or something?
Yes.
What?
My dad said this, we're descendants of monkeys.
Descendants of monkeys?
Yeah.
Well, let's not discuss your family life and problems here. Donna Jean, why do you believe in God?
It runs in the family.
Oh, that's nice. Well, let's see, we'll come to another one here pretty soon. It's I don't know who to ask this one from. Who did I ask this question about? Let's see here. I guess must have been I think it was Annette. Yeah, that was it. What did Adam and Eve do when they were expelled from the Garden of Eden?
They raised Cain.
Did you hear that? Isn't that awful? Well, they did, didn't they? They didn't do a very good job of it, did they? Then we have, I don't know whether we have any more or not. I suppose you'd be glad if they're not. That concludes this little ending amusingly. But I want you to think of the values of being able to come to church and smile. And do so over things that God certainly is not displeased with. He wants you and I to be happy. There may be times when when you are so affected that you laugh right out loud. There's nothing wrong about it. But of course, we try to contain ourselves when we get in our chapel, and we don't singularly laugh right out loud so everybody turns and looks to see what's going on. But it's right for us to laugh, to smile, to have a good grin on our face. You know, Edgar Guest wrote a poem about that. Somebody said it couldn't be done, but he, with a chuckle, replied that maybe it wouldn't. Maybe he couldn't, but he would be one that wouldn't say so till he tried. So he buckled right in with a trace of a grin on his face. And if he worried, he hid it. And he started to sing as he tackled a thing that couldn't be done. And he did it. And if you used to read the rest of that poem by Edgar Guest, it is encircled by the fact that a grin and a smile and a laugh is very conducive to our spiritual welfare, as well as words that might be contained in our scriptures. Not in the same vein, but it's important that we do this. We should do those things that brings happiness and joy and peace. Because that's one of the great things that God has said to us. He made man that they might have joy. Open the book at random and sing 367. Yes, Jay.
I have a question. You said
Sunday night that you were going to bring something here that nobody had seen
before. Oh, did I do that?
Yeah.
Oh, for goodness sakes. There it is. It's a peanut. I said that nobody, not even myself, has ever seen before. Never seen it before. And you'll never see it again. Thank you. Not only that, it tastes good.
You fooled me. I thought you was talking about time.
You was talking about what?
I thought when you made that statement, you were talking about time.
Time?
Time.
Well, how could I bring you time? I got one in my pocket here because my wrist is sore.
That's good.
You know, speaking of time, you know, I've noticed that a lot of you people, a lot of our people, maybe I should say, the appointed time is 10 o'clock for Sunday school. He says so on his piece of paper, and you know it without my telling you. Yet many of you come trailing in 10 minutes, 15 minutes afterwards. The following services are preaching, more often than not. Come trailing in just in time to get here for the preaching. And so often when the meeting is called for the second service of the morning, we look and there's so many empty seats. And even then they come trailing in after that. Time. And because I have seen this so often, see it now very prevalent, would you think it wrong if I was to ask you to carry your watches in your hip pocket? That way you'd always be ahead of time. So now we will stand and joyously sing, "Blessed be the tie that binds."